It is Friday and it's very cold. A very good morning to you. Welcome to the station that's gonna warm you up. Welcome to the... It has been warming you up already, you know. David has been warming you up already. And who did we have? Matthias? We have Matthias as well. You know, good morning. It's a Friday morning and it's actually... It's not freezing, but it's cold enough actually this side as well. So good morning. How are you this morning? How is the weather like actually in your place, in your town? Is it as cold as this side? It's not that freezing, but it does. You know, if I feel it a little bit, so then it should be cold really somewhere else. All right, good morning and welcome to your favorite. Talk radio station, and you just tuned into Unpacking the Day here on Eagle FM. Thanks for joining us, and it's a pleasure for choosing Eagle FM, and it's a pleasure for us to be in your company, especially at this point in time. It's a Friday morning, and it's always on Friday we always have that energy. We don't know where does it comes. The other days, we drag our feet, you know, we drag our feet, but Friday, you know, it just gives you some kind of some energy, some vuma. So my name is Mike Oshavili, and this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business news, economic news, and political news. And every week and every weekday, we cut through the noise. We cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends and numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it clear. We keep it clear and always, always, always curious, asking questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect of those Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you know, the listeners can be part of the bigger conversation as well. So this is your platform. This is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories with me. So our time, it's about 3 minutes past the hour of 8, and we're coming live. We're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. I'll be with you until around 10 o'clock when I'll be handing over. I don't know whether it's to Tatenalo Vanda or we're handing it over to Winter, but possibly it will be Tatenalo Vanda. So make sure that you stay tuned and stay locked on Eagle FM. So, all right, as usual, you know, nothing changed. And if you're just joining us, Welcome. You just right on time and get on board. So as usual, we look on this, we go back into history. So we look on this day. What happened on this day in Africa? So good morning to you and welcome to our segment on this day in Africa. So today is June the 5th. It's June the 5th, and we have quite a lineup of history to look back on. Now, let's start by turning the clock back to 1979 in Ghana. You know, on this day, a group of young military officers made a bold move. They freed Flight Lieutenant Jerry Rowlands, Lieutenant Jerry Rowlands from prison, and overthrew the government led by General Fred Akufo, you know. So then Rowlands step up to lead the new ruling council. So it was a major turning point for the country's politics. Staying in the region, today is also a holiday in Seychelles. It is a Liberation Day, and this marks the event of 1977 when a change in power brought Franz Albert Rhine to the lead. So it's a day that shape the future of those islands, you know. So a liberation day today for Seychelles. Now let's move to South Africa in 1994. On this day, a simple photograph meant so much. You know, a legal picture of Nelson Mandela was released to the public, and it was one of those first widely seen photos of him since he went actually to prison back in 1964. For many, that image was a sign of a new beginning. So a move away from the past and towards freedom. So moving forward to a recent history. On this day in 2020, many people in Mali took to the street. It was the start of the June 5 movement, what so-called June 5 movement. Crowd gathered to demand the resignation of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, and they were unhappy with the government and security issues. So those protests led to big political changes in the months that followed. Finally, today is not just about history, it's about our future. It's also about our future. June 5th is World Environment Day. So June 5th is a World Environment Day. Today is World Environment Day. Across the continent, African nations joined the rest of the world to focus on nature. And it is a time to speak up for conservation, you know, speak up conservation and look after our conservation, look after our climate. So today, just make sure that you take a walk, maybe in nature, just get yourself close to nature this morning, you know. So today is the World Environment Day. Or try to keep your environment clean. Okay, let's do something today. Let's keep our environment clean. Let's do some cleaning today, okay? Just do something that help our environment this morning or today. So you have the whole day to do something, okay? So that is our look at the history book for today. So thank you for listening to On This Day in Africa. All right, eight minutes from 8 o'clock. So it's our time. So yeah, let's look at what is our thought for today. So, and here is a thought to start your day. So there's a proverb that says envy is the art of counting the other fellow's blessings instead of your own. Envy is the art of envy is the art of counting the other fellow's blessing instead of your own. Now, how often do we spend our time looking at someone else's success or someone else's opportunities or someone else's happiness and forget to appreciate what we are, what we already have? You know, the truth is that there will always be people with more than us. There will always be people more than with us. I mean, there will always be people with more than us. But there will also always be people who wish they had what we have. You know, that's a fact. So when we focus too much on comparing ourselves to others, we miss the blessing, the talents, and the opportunity right in front of us. So gratitude changes our perspective. Okay? So when you are thankful, you know, it changes perspective. It reminds us that life is not a competition, but a journey. Eh? But a journey. So today, instead of counting what others have, take a moment to count your own blessing. Take a moment to count your own blessing. So you may discover that you are actually richer in a way that money can never measure. That is your thought for the day. And good morning to you if you're just joining us. So what do we have today in the show? What do we have? What is coming up in a few minutes? So we will be speaking to Dorothea. We will be speaking to Dorothy Nangolo. She's the Namibia National Student Organization, NANSO. So there's a tension between NANSO and NASFAF, Namibia Student Financial Assistance Fund. And the tension have reached a breaking point. That's actually following a meeting that they have, a stalled meeting regarding systemic delays in disbursement, in the disbursement of student fund, of funding. So we will get into her. We will probably in a few minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, we'll be speaking to her and about that. And also, the Villager, today's edition, is out. As always, if you're looking for the latest business and economic news, you know, get yourself a free copy of The Villager. What you need to do is just simply send a WhatsApp message with your name and email to 08 241 44. So then you will be getting your free copy every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Make sure that you do it today. If this is your first time, if you are hearing this for the first time, do it now. Do it now. Don't wait. So that Monday, you will get your free copy of the Villager. So, the front page, we're going to look at what making the front page, the story that actually making the front page. The Namibian government has officially received the completed feasibility study on the potential revival of the national airline, and is currently reviewing the report to determine the project's commercial viability. So we're going to look at that. We're going to get into the story a little bit more and, well, unpack it. So I'll invite you to unpack that with me. So, and of course, you know this. You know the routine, man. You know the routine. Your participation will also be part of the show, of course. So let's see if we can get Dorothea, and then see if we can speak to her and tell us what is going on. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a sec.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana longe shifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongote samwene. Anange shifa ya Namibia. Ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayaguro ni randitomwa yoe, yongeshefa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashipareki uimopo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konarahe tatu imwe. Datundatu heari hamano tano oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM. The eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's #1 talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store
or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omotiha with the Kirokabuna e Matina Onjo. Chikao Shafa Sanana Longa Shifa.
Welcome back. Good morning and welcome back to Unpacking the Day. So this morning we're looking at a growing crisis affecting thousands of students across Namibia. Delays in the disbursement of tuition and non-tuition funding have left many students struggling to get to class or to pay for their accommodation or buy food or in some cases even sit for examination. So the tension between the Namibia National Student Organization, NANSO, and the Namibia Student Financial Assistance Fund, NASFAF, have now reached a deadlock after a recent meeting ended without any agreement. So NANSO has since announced a planned protest, I think for today, arguing that students have waited long enough for promise to be fulfilled. So to help us unpack the situation and understand what students are experiencing on the ground, we are joined by NANSO President, Dorothea Nangolo. Dorothea, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
I couldn't hear you. Say that again. Can you speak up?
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning.
Yeah, I can hear you now. So good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Now, for listeners who may not have followed this story closely, what was discussed during the meeting before NANSO decided to walk out, and what exactly led to the deadlock between NANSO and NASFAF?
I think we were initially just discussing the state of the fund. They're explaining to us the cause of the delays, and also then the proposed plan moving forward. However, we found ourselves at a point where we did not agree with the proposed plan, but also the reasoning that were given was unacceptable in our view, because students are continuing students. They were known to the fund since last year, and so it does not make sense that, you know, for 2 months, only around 4,000 students have been paid, and we still have around 46,000 students that are remaining. So there's no reasonable explanation that is acceptable to us. Yes, we understood at the time the administrative constraints, but it was not reasonable to us because we have a large number of students who have not received their non-tuition. I think it would have been much more reasonable if half of the students would have been paid at least, and then the other half were not paid. That was something that we were considering a reasonable situation.
So why did the NANSO feel that continued negotiation was no longer an option?
I think, first of all, that was not we would not call it a negotiation. It was a discussion, and we did not feel the need to remain any further in a discussion that was not fruitful for us, especially we have students who were desperately waiting for some sort of feedback or good news, and that was not available for us. So we did not feel the need to continue engaging in an engagement that was not providing tangible solutions.
Okay. And now, in practical terms now, in what way the delay money, this delayed money is affecting student day-to-day lives?
I'll draw a picture for you. Right now we have a student who can't make it to the examination hall because they simply can't afford $60 to go from their home to UNAM, which is double. That's the reality. It's not a joke. We have students who are sleeping on campus as we speak. You can go to UNAM and see for yourself. You'll find students who have decided to sleep on campus because they have an exam tomorrow and they can't afford to go back home because they were studying there. Additionally, you have students who simply don't have food. Again, go to UNAM, go to NAST, go to IUM, walk into the dormitories and you will see the exact situation. Our students need support. it's not a joke. This 2,400 sounds like very small money to those that are employed.
Yeah.
For those that are in a better financial position. But that is a large amount for us as students.
So from what you know, and maybe from the discussion, what do you think what do you think is that is at the root of NASFAF repeated missed deadlines?
I think it's administrative issues, but it's also a lack of commitment on their end to really resolve these issues, because these are issues that are reoccurring every single year.
Yeah.
I think it's the snake bites you twice, you would know where that snake hides, and you're able to plan better. But in this case, it was not done.
Yeah. So the Ministry of Education, I think it released a statement saying payment have been processed since April and that advance payment were made to institutions. What is your response to that?
Yes, that is true. And we really, really applaud government for that. There, we take our heads off for government. That has been done. However, we had situations where private institutions were requiring 50% payment tuition. Before students can write exams. But again, we applaud government because we were informed yesterday that they had an urgent meeting with the institutions. They also gave a directive to the institutions informing them not to prevent students from writing exams. So they, again, take our heads off.
Oh, yeah. And you are, the NANSO has also called for a protest at the government park today. Yes. What do you hope the demonstration will accomplish?
I think the demonstration really wants to demand for sustainability in terms of funding, to say how do we fix these issues long term so that they are not reoccurring.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think we're at a point where we had a very good meeting with the Honorable Prime Minister yesterday, where government has made very, very good commitments, and we are excited to announce those commitments to the students in the protest, but we felt we still need to pursue with our protest, so we show NSWAP that we are serious. We will not, we will no longer tolerate empty promises. But I can assure the listeners and the students now that the government has listened to us.
Yeah.
There's good news for the students, and we'll announce that today. It's just that we will proceed with our protest despite the news that we've received when we had that engagement yesterday.
Okay. Now, looking at the bigger picture, do you think the structure of student funding in Namibia needs to be reformed, probably entirely, do you think that it needs some kind of reform?
I think the structure is it's a good structure. NANSO is honest. Our government is doing a good. Our government is trying. We have good structures. We have good systems, institutions, and processes. The challenge is implementation. That's our issue here.
Yeah.
NSO's structure and model is a good structure, but the implementation becomes a crisis.
Yeah.
When we make commitments to pay on a monthly basis, but we don't afford it or we don't manage to do it, it becomes a major concern. So I think ours is really refining our institutions, administration, and beefing up their capacity.
Yeah.
And I say this because NSWA, for instance, is unable to make payments every single day to students. They only pay on one day per week because of the existing mechanisms in government in terms of treasury approval and so forth that make it difficult for this to be done. But these are things that can be fixed to respond better to the needs of students and to the broader needs of Namibian House. I think these are, for instance, invoicing. NSWAF system is not linked to the institutions. Institutions must manually send invoices. We could just link the systems. The moment a student who applied for NSWAF registers at UNAM, immediately it flags the NSWAF head office that this person, they are real, they exist, and they are truly doing that course.
Yeah.
That makes things easier and much more seamless.
Yeah. Well, because of time, looking ahead, what long-term changes are needed actually to prevent students from facing this situation again?
we want practical solutions. We want practical administrative solutions. Like I said, linking of systems to deal with it, but also fixing internal governmental policies to allow the fund to be more flexible, such as making daily payments, making it easier for payments to be processed, authorization processes must be made easier.
All right. Ms. Nangolo, thank you for joining us and for sharing Nanso's perspective on this important issue. We appreciate your time and wish you well as this discussion actually continue.
Thank you very much, and I hope to see the listeners at 9:30 Government Park.
All right. Let's hope that they will come. Yeah.
All right.
All right. That was Dorothea Nangolo. So she indicated that she doesn't have much time because of some other commitment now that we could have actually have asked some other questions, but we covered, I think, the most important thing about what is happening between Nanso and Naswaf. So good morning to you. If you are just joining us, I just had a discussion with Dorothea Nangolo. She's the Nanso president, and just to give us an idea what is going on, what has been going on between the tension that has been going on between Nanso and the Namibian Student Financial Assistance Fund, NASFAF, which actually have reached a deadlock. After a recent meeting ended without an agreement. So there will be a protest this morning, starting I think at the Government Park. And if you want to support the student, make your way there as well. So what is your take? What is your take of that? So if you want to come through and just have your quick reaction on that, you're most welcome. Our telephone number, we're coming to you live from the Ondangwe studio. Our telephone number is 08-333-66-091. 08-333-66-091. So waiting for your call.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. And thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us. And you're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome to Unpacking the Day. Yeah. So as I said, we just had a quick interview with the president, Nanso president, Dorothea Nangolo. On the crisis actually affecting thousands of students across Namibia. So we'll come back after this.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back. Yeah, so, yeah, as we speak, and we have really a growing crisis that's affecting really thousands and thousands of students across Namibia, and this has to do with disbursement of tuition and non-tuition funding, and because of those delay, definitely it left many students struggling. And as you heard from Nangolo, and she indicated, she painted a picture where to said, well, there are students that are really, they can't go home. They have no accommodation where they stay. They have no food, and issues of also sitting for the exam, you know. So, yeah, there are a lot of these are unfortunate situation. And when I ask, you know, what could be the problem, that there's an you know, there has been a postponement, if you like, delays in terms of deadlines that were set, you know, and it's all administration, you know, and probably incompetent of people at NASFAF. So you, what else can you say? Yeah. So, yeah. What do you think? You know, seriously, what do you think? What is your take on that? There will be a there's a planned protest that will take place, that will actually start at the government building. Yeah. So yeah, if you would like to support the student, so go and join them. 08333-66091. 08333-66091 is the number you can, you know, you can dial to talk to me, to react on this issue. 08333-66091. All right, and all right, we move forward. Let's move forward. Our time is about 33 minutes. Past the hour of 8. All right. Okay. Where are we now? All right. So, okay. So it's a bit cold. I hope it's not as cold as it feels here. So, yeah, pull up your chair, man. You know, let's warm you up. Pull up your chair. Pour yourself a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, you know, some rooibos tea or so. Because what we're going to do now, we're going to talk about, and I'm definitely ask you to do that, because what we're going to talk about now, we're going to talk about our national airline, or rather the idea of bringing of bringing one back. So that's what we're going to talk about. And you need to warm you up yourself, because you know, it's gonna be bumpy. You remember in Namibia. Let's just go back a little bit. Okay. This is a story in today's edition of the Villager, by Ngino Minavali Hangala. It's a story that actually making a front page on our on the Villager. So make sure that you, as I said earlier, make sure that you subscribe for you to get a free copy of the Villager every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So what you need to do is just send your WhatsApp message to that number, to this number, 081-241-44, you know, with your name and your email address. All right. So that would make you subscribe, and you will be receiving your digital copy of the Villager every Monday and Wednesday and Friday. Okay, so remember the Remember Air Namibia? That national airline that went belly up, drowning in debt, owing money to almost everybody. Yeah? owing money to almost everybody, from aircraft lessor to our own airport operators. We were owing money to everybody. Yeah? The one we all, this is the, you remember that Air Namibia, the one we all watched go down in flames, you know, wondering how it got that bad in the first place. You know, really? So, well, now brace yourself, my friend. Brace yourself, because the government is talking about bringing a national airline back. So they want to bring it back. They are calling it now, there's no more Air Namibia. They just changed the Air now got to the front, Namibia Air. So Namibia Air. And a feasibility study to see if this thing can actually fly, I mean, commercially speaking, has just been completed. So the feasibility study has been just completed. And but there is an issue. There's an issue already, you know. Oh, Mike, come on, man. There's already an issue? Yes, there's an issue already. For me, there's already an issue. The government has the report, the feasibility report. They have the feasibility report. And they are not sharing it with us. Eh? They are not sharing with that with us yet, probably. Okay, let's add yet there. Okay? So they are not sharing this. They are not sharing the feasibility study with us yet. Not the findings, you know. They are not sharing what are the findings. Not the cost breakdown. So not even how much of our money they have actually spent on this study so far. So, and that's probably, that's something that worth actually unpacking. So, yeah, let's look at that. Let's unpack that together. So, now I want to take you back a little bit, okay? So that let's get the bigger context of what we're talking about. You know, let's not just jump, you know, to this. Okay, let's take you back. As we know, Air Namibia was not just an airline, okay? It wasn't just an airline. It was a symbol, of course. Namibia, an airline is a symbol for that country. So when you saw that flag on the tail, how do you say that? Is it, how do you call that part? You know, tail fin, yeah. When you see that at the Jose Akutako, or look, especially for those of us some who are outside, you know, who study like outside, and then like in South Africa, when you see your, when you look and when you come into the airport and you see your airline there, you know, it was a pride, okay? It was a pride, you know. When you see that, you feel proud. When you just see that flag on the tail on the on a tail fin or something, you feel there we are, you know. Yeah, it was a pride. Eh? It was a pride of the sky for Namibia. For us, it was a pride of the sky, you know, linking us to Johannesburg, Frankfurt, you know, Cape Town, and other key international places. So yeah, it was a pride of the sky for Namibia, you know, for our flag. But I'm saying this, and actually this is something also, you know, David mentioned earlier on when he was actually going through the paper, the newspaper. So that, but pride does not pay fuel bills, actually. You know, pride does not pay fuel bills. Pride does not actually settle debt with aircraft leasing companies. Because we have a lot, we have debt with aircraft leasing companies, you know, and pride certainly does not keep a bankrupt airline in the sky. So, now take note of that pride, because are we doing this? because it's commercial viable, or are doing this? Are we doing this? Are we bringing this back because of a pride? Eh? Are we doing that? So take that note. Take, okay, have that at the back of your mind. I deliberately talk about pride here. So, and as I said, pride, and it's true, it doesn't pay full bills. It doesn't. And if we go, if we do this because of pride, so we definitely end up where we started, where we were before with Air Namibia. Now, Air Namibia was liquidated because it owed money. It owed money everywhere. Aircraft owners were owed. Airport operator were owed money. Service provider were owed money. You know, the debt pile was so massive. The debt pile was so massive and the business model so broken that the government actually of the day finally actually just pulled the plug, man. So where they needed to pull that. They tried. They, you know, like on someone on resuscitating somebody, you know, they really tried. They really tried until, you know, we need to pull the plug. We need to pull the plug. And it was painful. It was painful. Well, it was painful because people lost jobs. There are a lot of people who have lost jobs. We also lost the route, you know, where our flight used to route to, you know. And Namibia became one of the few countries in SADC, one of the few countries in SADC region without a national carrier. Without a national carrier. So now when I'm talking about pride, could also come in place. Maybe that could be also something that we are thinking now. We actually one of the countries that have no national carrier. So it could be pride. It could be pride. Now, so the other thing then, you would think actually that after going through that kind of expensive public embarrassing collapse, because it played out publicly, you know, I think after all that, you know, after going through all that kind of that humiliation or embarrassment collapse, you think that the idea of starting another airline would come with a mountain of caution, eh? So, and maybe it does, and maybe it does. Okay, let me not just take it for granted. Maybe it does. But what we have seen so far, it does not exactly scream caution. It doesn't scream caution really. It screams secrecy, actually. if you look at it, it actually screams secrecy. Oh, I nearly fall. So it screams secrecy, and that should concern every one of us. That should really concern every one of us, every Namibian. Okay? Then think about it. Think about it. Because if the last airline went under because of debt and mismanagement. Now, the question everyone, I think, that this is also the question that was actually put to the minister, you know, in the parliament. What has fundamentally changed to make a new one viable now? What is fundamentally changed to make a new one viable? And this shouldn't be just about pride. So that's the underlying questions. That's the underlying question that we're looking at as we unpack this story. So what has fundamentally changed to make this, you know, Namibia the one that is viable? What we need to see. Now you see, now you're telling us this, as I said, this doesn't actually scream caution. But it actually screams secrecy. So there's nothing that we know yet. Well, we still have to wait. We still have to wait. So, and see. But we, as citizens, have to be very, very, hey, Meshwe Tuna Pashuke, eh? When the penny, when the bottle sees it. So that's you did us once. If it happened twice, then that's on us. That will be on us now. Okay? That will be on us. So what do we know now? Okay, what do we know so far? Now, here is what the Minister of Works and Transport told the Parliament. So the feasibility study is done. It is complete. And it's now under review by government. So that is the official line from the minister, from Minister Veiko Nekundi. So he confirmed this while, while responding to a fellow MP, Nelson Kalanga, Kalangula, not Nelson Kalanga, Nelson Kalangula, who had a good sense. He actually has a good sense to ask some of the very basic questions. Eh? So the question that we, that we should be, a question that we should all be asking, when was the study completed? How much did it cost? And how is this is exactly the question that I was asking earlier, how is this different from all the reports that came before Air Namibia's collapse? How is this different? Show us, how is this different? And those are, as I said, these are the exact questions every Namibian should be asking. These are the questions that we should be asking. And the minister confirmed the study is done, but it's here where things get a little bit interesting. Now, he said that because of the, and I'm paraphrasing here, complex and competitive nature of aviation sector, he could not reveal all the detail publicly. Not yet. So we have a completed study paid for with paid for with public funds. And the minister is choosing to keep the content under wrap. All right. Now, okay, to be fair, the aviation industry is indeed complex, okay? That we have to acknowledge. So it's indeed complex. It's a capital intensive, heavily regulated, and brutally competitive. So that we have to acknowledge, okay? Example, South Africa, for example. South Africa Airways itself has been in and out of business rescue. They have been in and out. So, and Comair, there was also another, Comair went under. and we have even established carrier, globally, have struggled, especially after COVID. Many airlines have actually struggled, One can understand when the minister, as I said, one have to be fair, can understand when the minister said it's a complex, competitive nature because of that. But, the minister is not, as I said, the minister is not actually, it's not wrong about the complexity. But complexity is not a shield. Complexity shouldn't be a shield against public accountability. If anything, the more complex the sector, the more transparent actually we need. No less, really. The more complex it is, the more transparency we need. So complexity is not a shield against public accountability. This is funded, So this is actually funded, paid for. This is actually paid for with public funds. It's paid with public funds. So we cannot have it. We can't have the content actually wrapped, and we can't have the content. We can't keep the content wrapped up, you know. We can't have the content being the secret because of the complexity and competitive nature of the sector. No. So that cannot shield public accountability. So, all right. Remember when I always tell you, there are two things that I always tell you. You know, numbers don't lie, and follow the money. Okay? Now, I followed the money. I followed the money. Now, this is where now, okay, as I said, I put on my investigative instinct now, like, here it really kick in, you know? So, yeah, because I'm following the money. Follow the money. Now, the ministry allocate 20 million, you know, that is 20 million Namibian dollar for this feasibility study. 20 million. That's a lot of money, okay? So that is a lot of moolah. And that, now, 20 million, okay. Now, in terms of priority, and then comes, it hit me. Okay, 20 billion. Now, in terms of priority, now you're thinking, okay, you know, given where we are now, if I were, you know, what would I actually done with that money? So that's the kind of money that could build a clinic. You understand? That's the money that could build a clinic. That could equip several schools, actually, maybe with textbook. Eh? That could actually fix potholes in your town. Right? In your towns, really. Seriously, yeah. In terms of priority, it could have, you know, that kind of money could. Okay? Now, and according to the minister's own update, this is now the minister's own update, only about 4% of that 20 billion has been used. 4%. That is roughly from 20 million. Okay. Why didn't I do this before? So, yeah. It's close to, okay, let me count quickly. It won't take long. All right. So, yeah, it's about 800,000. Why did it take me so long to figure this out? It's 4%. So, roughly 800,000. Okay? So, the minister said, only about 4% of that 20,000, of that 20 million has been used. Now, on the surface, you know, when you look at that now, you kind of like, and probably this is how those who are in the parliament now felt when they hear that. That's how they felt. On the surface, that sounds like good news. Kind of like, oh, that's a good news. We saved money. But I want you to think, my friend. Really think. Yeah? So did we save money? Probably we did, but they budgeted 20 million. Okay? They budgeted 20 million. They spent 800,000. Which means either this was incredibly efficient study. How would I put it? So it's either it was an incredibly efficient study, or the budget was widely inflated. It was widely inflated from the start. How else you think about it? It was widely inflated from the very beginning. Or this is the possibility that keeps me worried. Okay? This is the possibility that keeps me worried. Or the money has been earmarked for things beyond just a feasibility study that we do not yet know about. So how do you look at that? Now, you say, for example, you are now the person that's, you know, These are things that you have been told, right? Okay. So how do you look at that? Why? Now, think of this now. If you budget 20 million for a study and only use a fraction, the natural question is, if I was for example, if I was in the parliament, I would ask, why was 20 million allocated in the first place? I want to know. You only use 4%? Why was 20 million allocated in the first place? Was there a detailed cost estimate? Because before you actually give this, before you now approve the 20 million for the feasibility study, there must be a detailed cost estimate. I mean, if you are in charge of this, this is what you want to know. You're just told, okay, the feasibility study is about, 20 million. Okay. And here you, okay, who approved it? Who approved this figure? That's another question I would ask. Yeah? You told me you budget this for 20 million and you only used about 800 million. What is going on here? Yeah? Where is the detailed cost estimate? Who approved this? And what happened to the remaining 19.2 million? What happened to the remaining? This is what I would ask. Eh? What happened to the remaining? Does it go back to the treasury? The 19.2 million? Would it go back to the treasury? Does it get reallocated? Eh? Is it being reallocated, or does it quietly fund the next phase without parliament? Because if they have it, it actually can fund the next phase without parliament or the public getting a say. Do you see this? Do anyone see the problem? Eh? Where is the remaining 19.2 million? And who decided that the 20 million was the right amount for a study that only cost 800,000? Who? I want that person. If it was me, I would never settle. Eh? I will be on the tail. Seriously, now think about this, man. Eh? Who decided that 20 million was the right amount for a study that only cost about 800,000? No wonder, if I have to start to think, there's something fishy is going on already from the way things are already starting to pin out. It's not really good. And if you are a member of parliament, if you are MP, really, you are a lawmaker, these are the issues that you should be thinking, my friend. Eh? These are the things that you should be thinking. I need to find out. You tell us. I'm also asking now. Tell us, Mr. Nekunti, who decided that 20 million was the right amount for a study that only costs 800,000? Who? I know you won't answer me here, but someone pick up that question, please. I want to hear that in the parliament. Pick that up. Eh? We need to find out. All right? So, that was for the NASFAF. we tried to get someone to talk in terms of this from NASFAF. You write the emails, they ask you write email and all that kind of stuff, and then, you don't get a response, Yeah, so that's the thing. So this is very important, really. And as I said, people think, oh, we saved money. No, we didn't. Something is not right here. Something is not right here. All right. So the minister also told the parliament, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, that the Namibian leaders, just like leaders around the world, must know what to publish and when to publish. Okay, let me unpack that for you. What he's essentially saying is that the government will decide when the public is ready to know. That's basically what he's saying. So the government will decide when the public is ready to know. Not that the information is not available. The information is available. Not that the report is incomplete. The report is already done. It's complete. But that the timing of disclosure is a matter of political judgment. The timing of disclosure is a matter of political judgment. And in a democracy, that should make you, it should make you uncomfortable. That should make you uncomfortable because who decides the right time? The ruling party, the ministry, a committee behind closed doors? Who decides the right time? Public funds paid for this study. Do you understand? My point is this. Public fund paid the study, and the Namibian people are the shareholders of any national airline. We are the shareholders, and shareholders have a right to see the books.
Fund paid for this study.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpaid. Yes. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Big Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
I'm all right, Mike. It's like those thing of like, oh, you're supposed to warn me. No. The things when they were money involved for public.
Yeah, this is public money. Yeah.
Yeah, it must be open so as we can also critique. What? Can add something.
Scrutinize, especially when it comes to this issue here now of the airline. So because we know what happened, you know, we know what happened to the previous. You can't make this a secret. You know, you can't keep it now. It won't work.
It won't work because remember one thing that we don't want to go through the same story to what happened to Air Namibia. Yeah, now coming up with Namibia Air, it doesn't make difference even for you to keep it as out like the way they done it before. Because remember one thing that they hired the bus, but the bus was not belong to them. Just imagine, how can you hire something for more than 10 years? It's like I thought they cannot... what are they supposed even to do? Because, Mike, if I'm driving your car, man, how can I hire your car for more than 2 years? Like I'm paying it off.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Namibia.
Yeah.
They're hiring for the bus, for the Airbus for more than 10 years. Yeah. And they were paying off with the premium for that person. And they end up not even...
And it was a lot of money.
Of money, my friend.
100 and something million, you know?
Just imagine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And there, in that process, they were supposed to, some people are even supposed to be already in jail also. Because you cannot do that. That Airbus, with you listen to the people, they come and take their Airbus. They're supposed to be Namibian, belong to Namibia now.
Yeah.
Even though we don't have airline now, we're supposed to have our bus which are waiting for us to get back to the track. But I think this time also with engagement of what? Ethiopia, because we know that they are the good one in Africa.
Yeah.
Maybe things will be different, but it's serious that we need to have more details.
Airline is a competitive sector, seriously. One of the reasons is that we were not even doing well in terms of commercial routes that we were taking, the countries where we were flying, we were not doing very well commercially, you know.
We are not
because of the competitions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would be different? That's the thing. What is the business model that are they going to take now?
But for me, I think we are having when it comes to tourism, we are good. We are having a lot of people come to visit Namibia.
Yeah.
But the problem is that when you look even our infrastructure, like where you cannot land a big aeroplane, they always have to interconnect to Cape Town or Durban.
Yeah.
Which I think is wrong. First of all, maybe we're supposed to fix our infrastructure first. Then we think of bringing it back. Because so many things we are losing out because of what our infrastructure that the big airline are not land in Namibia.
No.
They have to go through those interconnected, either like Nairobi or Ethiopia Airlines, or sometimes at the end up in South Africa. What I think for us, maybe they know what they are doing, but seriously, I think there are a lot of things we have to consider before we even bring it back. In Namibia, I understand we need it, and the people are not need job.
If we can understand what the business model that we're gonna take, definitely it's something that we it's not a need. It's not that we need it. You know, maybe something that when we're looking at now, as you're saying, tourism, you know, those are things that we're looking at to justify why we should have a national carrier, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. So, but I don't think really that it's a need.
It's not really a need.
What are we losing at this point in time not to having that?
Not to have any of it. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not really a need. It's something like just maybe to what wanted. You know, there's a need and want.
Yeah.
This is a thing what we want, because sometimes this is not a pressing issue.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the main point. If it's not even a want, even if it's a need, it's actually you're looking at what is the priority.
Okay? Yeah, exactly.
So if I have this 20,000, I mean 20 million, would I rather build the clinic? Or should I pay for the feasibility study?
Feasibility fund. And then, when you wonder even what to say, now if they say they spend only 800,000.
Imagine. You know.
Where's the rest of the money? And why it was even come to that conclusion to give it 20 million?
That's my issue.
Yeah, that's really a problem. And I think they need to explain to us.
Yeah.
Why should do it if you know the things are only costing what? 800. Why should you invest in 20 million?
Where's the detailed cost, you know, the cost estimate? Mm. That's what you need. Before you decided, okay, how much are we going to spend? Where's your cost outline? I mean, where's your cost, cost estimate? And even who have approved, when you approved the 20 million, you approved based on what? And that, then in the end, you end up actually only spending 800,000. That's something is not right at all.
What I'm saying is sometimes the way we do things is we make even like when we are doing things is like we see everybody is like blind. They cannot see. If you remember the first word guy, Sangara, this is what he did with what? To pay what? Can he spend the lawyer to negotiate on the behalf of Namibia genocide?
The problem here now is this. If we, let's say for example, even our parliament, they could have actually, who actually started asking question, when would this is complete, how much it costs, that's where, sometimes they don't go into really asking questions that are really relevant and that help us understand and hold accountable, because this is accountability, and hold leaders accountable to this. So when it comes into public, they cannot proceed because, you know, we need to know how much we spent. Give us the breakdown.
Breakdown.
But sometimes our MPs are just there. They are just happy to be there.
I'm telling you.
Thinking of their own, you know, of their own peg rather than actually the issues that, that are very important to the country. Yeah.
Seriously, I'm telling you, this is what we are saying. Some of MPs, even, they are there.
Sometimes it's the
just
people.
And imagine for the whole, when this start up to now, they never even stand up to say something.
Yeah, it's the people we have in the chamber. Eh? It's the people we have in the chamber sometimes.
Just imagine, even who was replacing the Minister of Energy, he come and now he's even the one who, how long has he not been in the parliament? But you know, he's standing up to some of these things.
Yeah.
But you have people who've been there, we know them. And you never even know this person is in parliament because he never say anything.
Yeah, they know how to talk at the party, Larry, yeah. But they can't talk
especially when they are they're campaigning. These are the top jitters.
In
the parliament,
they know how to talk at the party.
In the corner, it's like
Larry's, but in the
it's like a chihuahua facing even the bulldog. It's in the corner. But seriously, Mike, these things are supposed to be dealt with. You cannot do things which we used to do long time. No, it's too complicated. You cannot give it the detail because of what? Competition. No. We understand, but this is the money involved for public money account. Where is that accountability going to take place if you are putting secret?
Yeah.
And when thing even when sour is where you are coming to the public, like, no, we are not supposed to do that. Maybe we're supposed to do it the other way, different way. But we are supposed to advise you.
Yeah, this is actually when now we should be able now to say, guys, everything is in the open. You know, we know what happened before. Now we put everything in the open for you to know that this is legit. We are going a different way. And, you know, that's what now you need to do.
Exactly.
But now secrecy? No. We can't, you know.
We can't go that road anymore. I'm telling you. Because they put, even that time, they branded us like, how can you lend an Airbus for more than 10 minutes, brother? Seriously, I'm speaking now. If we knew, we're supposed already to, like, no, this is not the way you guys are supposed to do it. There are so many ways. You get that Airbus to pay it off.
Yeah.
You can't tell me you are lending, then you are paying money for that person still having that property. No, it's really, just imagine, my friend, up to now, there's nothing, nobody been even arrested or nothing. It was like kind of business as usual, what they are saying.
Yeah.
But seriously, I think this time, you know, things must be done different way.
Yeah, as I said, Namibian, we paid, the public paid, the public fund paid for this study, and we Namibian people are the shareholder of any national.
Yeah, anything which they are doing, I'm telling you, anything which involves money.
As shareholders, we have a right to see the books. Okay,
exactly.
We have a right to see the books.
I'm telling you, we cannot keep a secret the way they done it that time. No. We need to know, and they always must be a public consultant. Seriously.
Yeah.
Because now, wherever they do things, only come to the public after things are not working on their way.
But even when you say public consultant, who, if you ask a few people of within the government as well, you know, and who you publicly consulting sometimes? Eh? It's you sometimes consulting the people that are already within the framework. Yeah, no.
That's the problem. What do they do?
Yeah.
Every time, wherever they have a public consultant, they put it even in the what? Same with affecting Katutura, they take it to Safari or Gandhi Club. How many people are going there?
Yeah. So because even sometimes, you know, in your own area, you found that there were certain things, but you never knew there was any public consultants or something like that.
Never tell you, my friend. Even if you advertise
in
the
media.
For example,
now the petroleum and oil and gas things, and they're doing consultation in the. One have to go to the radio and really talk about there will be this consultation, and we need people to come. You don't hear about it, you know.
You cannot hear
it. And what it means is only available to maybe people that are more learned.
There's 10 people who are, I'm telling you. Mike, and when you're talking about veteran men, what I was involved in this chain supplier, where they are doing work, workshop for 2 days.
Yeah.
I went there because of some individual who connect me there. But when you get there, even the way they are talking about millions. you are like, this is not my place at all.
You see? Exactly.
Yeah, you have to put it up this, you have to do it. Anything like, no, guys.
So, as I said,
how long I'm person who are in Goria Hub, when I'm going to get involved?
Yeah, you see, when we talk, exactly, when you talk about those things, it's far away. You even feel, you know.
I'm telling you, but I like the way they are doing it, because now even like they are going for public concert and, you know, swag up. They are going to have a workshop there, but the problem, the money which they are talking about, the person is supposed to have. Some of us, we don't have. Maybe if they are saying it, there's a fund which is available for you to take a party, to buy a share, then we are talking. We are on the same table. But if you are taking, no, a person must have like a 20 million in your account, and then you are like, yo, how many of us we have that 20 million? Oh.
You see?
The moment they were trying to go to work on your side, it's all right, Mike. Let me give you a couple more chance.
All right, man. Thanks for coming through.
Shab, shab.
Yeah. 0833-66091 or 0833-66091. We come into you live from the Ondangwa studio. A very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Good. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
Fine, thank you. I want to touch on this divorce law.
Okay, just a quick one, okay?
Okay, the divorce law.
Because that's not the topic we're talking, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
The divorce law, as I understand it, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
If it is saying that the change is going to be that adultery or infidelity is not going to be a basis for divorce any longer, or going to be accepted as a basis of divorce any longer, that would deem the law or the change to the law, it's going to deem that unconstitutional, because if I am a Christian, and my Bible tells me that...
Anonymous, are you able to call me, let's say, for example, after 9:30?
After 9:30.
Yeah, then I'm just allowing now on the topic, and then after that, you know, you can be able now to... We can be
no
able
problem.
To get into that, yeah. Just after half past
divorce
9.
Law, if it says that it's unconstitutional, I'll call after 9 again.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. All right. So the minister also urged the nation, you know, to understand and appreciate the strategic scope and the framework required actually to enter such a complex and competitive industry. So, and I hear that. I really do. Aviation is not a game. It's not a game. It requires strategic planning. But, there's always a but. But strategic planning and secrecy, as we talk about, are not the same thing. You know, you can be strategic and still be transparent. Eh? You can be strategic and still be transparent. The two are not mutual. They are not mutually exclusive. Okay? In fact, the best strategy are the ones that survive public scrutiny. Someone say that. I don't know who, but the best strategy are the ones that actually survive scrutiny. Now, should the feasibility study paid for with public money be made available to the public before the government commit to the next step? Should it be? Before we commit to the next step, should that be not be available to the public? And as I said, especially with Namibia, with the Namibia now, you know. And as I said, the best strategy are the ones that survive public scrutiny. So, now the minister did give us something, you know. He shared the composition of the committee that has been working on this. And let's give credit where it's due. The committee include 3 aviation experts with a combined 50 plus years of experience. So he said. So because we still don't know what those, when we know the names, then we can be able to attest to that. And that's very significant. Okay. It's very significant. Aviation is not a sector where you learn on the job. Okay. It's not a sector where you learn on the job. You need people who understand, you know, route economics, fleet planning, regulatory frameworks, you know, and also understand the economy, the economics of fuel hedging. These are the things that you need. So when I said aviation is not a sector where you learn on the job. So yeah, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to have some of you on the plane. It will be my first flight. I'm learning on the job with you guys in the on the plane. Yeah. So that's the point. So aviation is not a sector where you learn on the job, okay? You should really be able to know what you're doing. Now the committee also include lawyers, transport economists, the governance expert. And they come from a range of institutions. And those range of institutions, ironically, much of them are government. Now, the Ministry of Work and Transport, the Ministry of Finance, the Office of the Government, of the Office of Attorney General, the Namibia Air Company, the Namibia Civil Aviation Authority, members from the aviation industry, you know, the Namibian Investment Promotion and Development Board, the NIDPD. You know, the NIPDB, okay? So, on paper, it's like a team. When you have a team, the lineup is not bad at all, okay? It's like when you have PSG at that time, when Neymar was there, you know, Messi was there. Who was there also? How many were? You know, so when you look at that on paper, this is excellent. This is a good team, yeah? Yeah, on paper, that's not a bad lineup. You have legal oversight, financial expertise, regulatory knowledge, and investment promotion. All in one room. All in one room. But, you know the but was coming. But here's the question that really, 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 really matter. Okay? Are these independent voices? So what do I mean? Because when you look at all this, they are all government officials who will ultimately, all these are government officials who ultimately do what? Will do what the political principle tell them to do. These are all government officials. Yeah? Because there is a difference in everything. The difference is actually everything. Yeah? The difference here is very everything. Are these independent voices? Now, I want you to understand one thing. And this is very serious. This is interministerial team of experts. Okay? This is an interministerial team of experts. So the interministerial team of experts is not the same as independent commission. Do you understand? So, as I said, this is a good lineup. It has all the experts, financial experts, and all this. But this is an intermediary, interministerial team. So that is not the same as an independent commission. Interministerial team report to ministers. They report to ministers. Independent commissions, they report what? They report to parliament. They report to the public. And if we are serious about getting this right, and I hope that there are some, you know, MPs, some MPs that are listening, you know, and if we are serious about getting this right, about not repeating the Air Namibia disaster, then the process needs to be independent, transparent, and subject to public oversight from day one. From day one, it should be subject to public oversight. Not that, not after the decision have already, you know, been made behind closed doors or something like that. Eh? Now, should the feasibility study be reviewed by an independent body? Eh? Should be they reviewed by independent body, not just a government-appointed committee. It should be reviewed by an independent body before any further commitment are made, before any money is committed to, or before a decision is actually made. So, now, let me lay out some questions, okay? Let me lay out some questions that this feasibility study about this, that this disabilities, disability, feasibility study and this government must answer. They must answer before a single addition dollar is committed to a new national airline. Yeah? And this, I believe, as I said, the only people that can rescue us is our parliament. Yeah? They are the only one who can rescue us. Now, and I hope there are those some of you are listening, honestly. Now, for me, the first thing is, what is the business case? Yeah? What is the business case? Looking at the problems that we had, what route will this airline now fly? Okay? Who are the target passengers? What is the revenue model of this envisaged, you know, airline? What is the revenue model? So we were leasing. What is the revenue model? That's what we're looking at. What give us all this should be very very. I don't know why. Why don't you see this as something important when it comes to this? Eh? Because a national airline, my friend, cannot survive on patriotism. It cannot survive on patriotism. I understand that, but it cannot survive on patriotism. That's so people will not pay more. People will not pay more just because people will not pay more to fly Namibian. Eh? They cannot just pay more to fly Namibian. No, they will fly whoever is cheapest. Yeah? They will fly whoever is cheapest, whoever is fastest, whoever is most reliable. That's what they will fly. Yeah? And that is actually the reality of the market. So, because I hear somewhere, the corridors, no, you have to be patriotism and what. No! I will choose what is cheap. Yeah? If Fly Namibia is the one that is cheap, I will go with Fly Namibia. If South African Air, whatever, airline is cheaper, I will fly with South African Airline. Yeah? If Ethiopian Airline is what, you know what? That is the reality of the market. What is your revenue model? Now, the second is how is this airline be structured. That's very important for us now. How is this structured? And we're going to come back and look at this when we come back from this.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai epetwa weda ko ombuni kiro ombe ombi hukusha onjiviro yoye irire ombupu ohakane na wina ikare no masa ko murungu wa indu weri rongere kusha umune ondengu okura ko imba una ovi une vya peke ko gondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe so twika ovingi no kukara no rupa ondando ya peke yukianja oshimariva o peresente dano komieve vitatu moshimariva o peresente umurongo komieve hambu umwe moshimariva o peresente umirongo ivari na dano Pamiedhe ya murongwa na vivari moshimarifu. Litooro rela ondengu, jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyano kife. Ashiesho imba ye kupe oshimariva shishu hina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uye kuha kainina. Itako na wina rishangika jinoni.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Mike, I'm back.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I also want to just, before I do the divorce thing, I just want to add a little bit of 2 cents on the proposed flight, the new Namibian Airlines, Air Namibia, again being revitalized.
Yeah.
I think that it's a good thing, and you are right, there should be some sort of rigorous input into the feasibility of it.
Yeah.
And I think the way that it can work is if the new Air Namibia focuses a lot on cargo.
Mm.
So in other words, they need to be able to take stuff from cargo planes from Walvis Bay to Katima Muliro.
Yeah.
So they need to invest in that airport there as well. They need to, when they buy planes, they can have one or two passenger planes. The rest of the fleet should be cargo planes.
Yeah.
Why? Because number one, we have a lot of copper that comes in that way. The copper can then be just flown from Katima Muliro to Walvis Bay.
Yeah.
Obviously, they must put the infrastructure in that. And because of the volume of material that is moving from Zambia into the port, that will release some burden off the roads.
Mm.
And the roads contractor or roads authority and whoever else, the municipalities can then start working to reduce to repair the roads. That's number one. So cargo must be a major aspect. And I'm not just talking about from Katima Muliro to Walvis Bay, but also from the border, or maybe what is this place called outside of Hobabas, going through the Trans Kalahari.
Yeah,
certain types of stuff that we import, a lot of things that we import, or whoever is going to be transporting goods that need to go to the harbor, they use then the cargo system. That gives some pressure off of our roads. That means that when the tourists come around, that they are then going to be experiencing the good roads again of Namibia, and the pressure that has been put on by this heavy trucks, the consignment of trucks that have been going out, that gets released a little bit, and then there's now a new, that's a revenue stream right there for you for this new proposed airline.
Yeah.
Second thing that I think it needs to happen is, the cargo must not just be on the metals. It should also include, chemicals and dangerous goods. So that's one part. Cargo is done. The second part is, that the routes that were the most profitable, because they've got that data, so the Frankfurt New York lines, I think it was, or the Frankfurt or China lines, maybe right now, that should be the second part, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have to have a fleet of 10 passenger planes, because 10 passenger planes require a lot or rely a lot on volume, and we might not have that volume to justify. So there is definitely potential to be able to build a business case if you include all of these things. Air Namibia initially had no cargo planes. And it shouldn't just be cargo planes. It could be things like helicopters, for instance, that also deal with smaller cargo or whatever it is. So then we increase that ability, and we reduce the pressure on trucks and the roads and so on. But obviously, theoretically, you can definitely build a business case. And it's, as you say there should be an independent party that does that study. But it's not something that is not impossible. And by the way, our national pride is it's something that is tangible. It's something that is very much necessary. Because you remember during Corona, Zimbabwe had to come and bring our so-called COVID-19 vaccines. We had to ask other countries, right? Yeah,
exactly.
So that says a lot about the administration of the country, how the people of that country see themselves. If a country like Zimbabwe can carry a national airline, right? And I think the GDP of Namibia might be slightly larger than that of Zimbabwe, right?
Yeah.
Or Malawi. Malawi also was the same thing, or whoever it is. Then we should also be responsible enough make sure that we have a national airline so that we can do what? So that we can show ourselves to be capable. But it's not just that it's about patriotism, you are right, but that is a major component.
Yeah.
And it is definitely something that is possible. It's possible to do it. It's not that it's impossible. Air Namibia was not wrong. What was wrong was the approach of Air Namibia, the economic feasibility of Air Namibia, the people that were being paid millions of dollars to basically run this company into the ground because they did not want to accept that they are doing the thing wrong or nobody was holding them accountable.
Yeah.
There's a way to do it.
Yeah. That's the main thing. The problem is not actually bringing it back. They actually is keeping it, maintaining it financially sustainably, you know? That's the main thing, you know? You can bring it back, but in 2 or 3 or 5 years or 10 years from now on, it might just go in the ground again, you know? Unless you have a business case.
If you have the business case, definitely you cannot go through into the ground again. For instance, right now, a company like Transnamib.
Yeah.
Transnamib has so much potential and it can go to a certain level.
Exactly.
For instance, after with the late founding father, he championed for the rail line to go all the way to where? Does it Ondangwa?
Lumbumbashi. I mean, not even just Ondangwa, up to Lumbumbashi.
It goes all the way to Lumbumbashi. But that was a wrong idea. That was a wrong thing. Instead of looking at the of going, because we don't trade that much with Angola. Mm-hmm. We trade more with Zambia. Why is there no railway line going from Namibia up until Katima Muliro? Mm-hmm. Katima Muliro should be one of the biggest centers of trade or people coming through, because at Katima you can go into Angola.
Yeah.
At Katima you can go into Zambia. At Katima you can go into Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
So how did they then think that, no, man, let's go to Lumumbashi? That was a wrong idea. That was not even just a wrong idea. You can go so far as to say it was a very silly idea.
But no,
it was a very misguided idea.
It wasn't. Actually, was thinking ahead than where we are now. We are talking Africa at intra-trade. If it became realistic, then we have already actually the network that we need for intra-business. I mean, for intra-trade.
If something is clear and it's logical, these people are intelligent people, right?
Yeah.
They know exactly where who we are bordering with.
Yeah.
Why did they choose Lumumbashi? Was it a political decision? Was it a, patriotic, or maybe remembering the struggle, now you want to go back to Lumumbashi? I don't know. But whatever it was, right? It was the wrong decision.
Yeah.
But with Air Namibia, it's the same as you say. Yes, we do want it, but it needs to be done the right way. There needs to be full consultation.
Yeah.
There needs to be a study. There needs to be a reasoning behind it. Not just a lot of yes men. The problem with having ideas when you are surrounded by people who only say yes to you, yes and amen is their only language, then you are in an echo chamber. There is no wrong idea. Then every idea you say is a good idea. You need people to oppose your idea. People who oppose your idea are good for you because they make you reevaluate what you are thinking and what you are planning.
Yeah.
And that's very good. Just like this divorce law.
Yeah.
This divorce law is a very bad idea if it is saying if you commit adultery, right, it is not grounds for divorce. I know there are other aspects to the amendment to the divorce law. I know they're talking about they want to protect children, blah, 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 blah. But this particular aspect of saying that there is no grounds for divorce because if somebody commits adultery, that is an unconstitutional act, I suppose, or amendment to the bill. It makes the bill then unconstitutional because it then limits my right, my religious freedom. I am a Christian, and if my Bible says that if I or my wife cheat, then that is grounds for divorce. Who is the state then to come and say opposite to that? Then the state is now trying to actively become my God, and it is an infringement on my religious freedom. That's what makes it unconstitutional.
But there are nuances. There are nuances where you can say, okay, let's say for example, you know, you haven't allowed yourself actually to have a sexual relationship with your wife, to have a sexual relationship, and then because of that, one of the member actually go outside. So now, you can only look at now, yes, you went outside, but you were not also giving me, you know, you were also not, we were not also living up to your obligations. Do you understand the nuances that I'm talking about?
No, but you cannot, two wrongs cannot make a right.
Yeah, but
you cannot say because the lady was not giving you, now you have a right to go outside of the marriage. All you can do then is you then can take the lady to court, and then you have now grounds to do what? You have now grounds to divorce that lady because she doesn't want to fulfill her marital obligation. And if she doesn't want to fulfill her marital obligation, then you have a right grounds for divorce. And you can divorce the lady and you can say, no, you are no longer interested in me sexually. Therefore, we have no grounds for this agreement, which is the marriage that we have. And then you can ask for a divorce.
But
why should you not divorce?
Would that make any difference? If there were, you know, if there were, let's say, for example, if the churches were doing what they need to do, if we were living up by what we believe we are, you know, as Christians, would that law make any difference?
The law is a direct violation.
What you're trying to say is like, this law is actually pushing us to do this. No, you were doing it anyway.
No. The law, right, infringes on a constitutional right to the practice of religious freedom. If my wife, for instance, goes and she commits adultery, and then you say, no, you don't have grounds for divorce, you have just infringed on my right to ask for a divorce on the basis of my religious beliefs. Whether or not I was doing it or not, whether the church is, you came and you interfered with something that you have no right to touch.
Yeah.
So that's where the argument stands there. So that is why I say that if they enact that part of the law, and I'm specifically only speaking to that part, if they enact that part, they are then going to be enacting an unconstitutional law. And unless they go and amend the constitution and say, you have no right to religious freedom, right, then they cannot touch it. Because and I don't understand how anybody, there are supposedly people out there who are legal minds. Why are they not considering that? So, why does the law society only knows what is wrong? When we came to the rights of the LGBT, because we had our other previous beloved baby cut, because of that, they stood by that and they said, no, these people have rights. Okay, but, why not religious rights? Why do you not consider religious rights?
But if you see this is you can challenge it constitutionally. Why does the church maybe put organize themselves and be able to challenge that if they know that constitutionally
the
we can
the church
be able
is not
to do
is not
that.
The spot is not the responsibility of the church to enact laws and to write the laws of Namibia. The people
I understand, but the law exists, and if it's now being violated, as you put it, being violated because of this law. So if you can challenge that constitutionally, then they should be able to do that, isn't it?
It is only the notion that the thing that I'm putting out is only the law is contradicting the constitution.
Exactly.
You cannot put down that law. No matter what the churches are doing or not doing, no matter what the people, the believers are doing or not doing, the law itself cannot. A snake cannot eat its own tail.
Yeah, no, it's not necessarily the church then. Okay, it's for me by saying church, but anyone, civil society or whatever, you know, where if we say that this actually challenge is actually contradict or contravene, or what is the word?
The constitution of the Republic of Namibia.
Yeah, of the Republic of Namibia. So then one can be able to challenge that.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying these people are not, I don't give them a whole pass to say, no, they didn't know. Yeah. They know exactly what they're doing. These people are trained professionals. They are lawyers. They are judges. They know exactly what they are doing. So what they do, when they do that, they are actively going out to infringe upon my and your religious freedom, right?
Yeah.
And the Law Society, when it was the homosexuals that they were talking about, they were supporting the homosexuals 100%. They were talking about the rights of the homosexual. Why are they not so concerned about the rights of the religious freedoms of Namibians? Namibians are 99.9% Christian.
Yeah.
Even if it's only a name, that's the religion that they identify as. So, but these people, they are willing to go out of their way to violate that, but they don't want to violate the rights of the homosexuals. Apparently the homosexuals, which is a minority of less than 1% of the population is homosexual, and they will burn down this whole country to make way for them. That's why I believe that certain ambassadors, because of their stance and their beliefs, right? And whether they should not even have been allowed to be ambassadors. They shouldn't have gone to the U.S. They should have been stripped of all of that and said, no, go back to the Law Society. You are just here to destroy this nation and to corrupt this nation. That's it. Why is it that a lot of the people that you see out there, they seem to have an agenda? Here they are, the ex-minister of justice, the Namibian newspaper, and all of these other so-called liberal people. Why do they have that idea that they want to destroy the family, and they want to destroy marriage, and they want to destroy Namibia?
All right. Anonymous. So yeah, that's a different topic. I have, and I will try again.
Other people.
Yeah, I have tried again. I actually talked to LAC through time, even yesterday. So and they sent me to the gender department, and they said, okay, we will come back to you because I wanted us to discuss this, and I will follow up again next week to see what we can discuss about that. Yeah.
The LAC will never treat to you, my friend.
Yeah, so yeah, no, I might get some. I might get somebody else to look at this as well. Okay.
Yeah, they will never put themselves in a position where they are now being held accountable because they know what they're doing.
Yeah. All right, man.
Anyway, yeah. Have a good weekend.
Bye. Great, man. Same to you. All right. Yeah, I was, good morning, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, morning, Big Mike, how are you?
Good morning, Uncle Bona, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah.
Maybe let me start with the last one.
Let's stick to the end.
No problem. We just have to correct issues.
Yeah.
And be put into proper perspective. Yeah, I will just see Vakula this one and then go to your main topic.
Yeah.
The airline. So what I want to say here is that the courts, the competent court of law, always come with the value judgment in terms of deciding any case. Issues of divorce, for example. Remember, the new law is actually telling you already that despite all these issues, maybe be it adultery, be it decision, or whatever kind of grounds, like mental and many, many other things. All this incurable kind of habitually criminality.
Yeah.
Those have been the ground, even the way you deny somebody from this, what the anonymous was talking about. So depriving somebody from this right that you always claim about.
Yeah.
So if the marriage has reached a point of no return, and the marriage has been disintegrated. So those are ground enough to convince us that this marriage can no longer be restored.
Yeah.
There's no prospect of restoration.
Yeah, I will try honestly to bring in somebody probably next week, and then we can talk about. Can we go to the other part because the time is going also? Yeah.
Let me go to the other part, but that one is clear, and we are happy with the decision of the court.
Yeah.
So the Namibia airline. I hope you all know the history of that airline. And I think it's from 1977, they are around. The death, because that thing has been just serviced. That was before the independence.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has just been serviced by the state money. And as a result, it found itself in the debt, whole debt, that even when the Namibia became independent, the debt was still there. And they were continuing to be serviced by the government. So it became unmanageable as the time went on. So hence, it was up to us, me and you, to now dig deep to service those debts. Maybe it was good enough, how they thought, that maybe it's good to do away with it and maybe restart from the beginning. And that is exactly what they did. If they are coming up with a new one, viable one, that they can be really funded by us, because the one that we are funding, the debt were not actually accrued for us to pay them off. So it was something that it was just deserted there and then it was put on our shoulder. So the one that is coming, as I'm hearing, perhaps they have found a way to really manage it.
Yeah, no, this is not the word that we want, Bangabwana. We don't want perhaps. We want the things now. It should be. What we're saying is transparency. Let's see what is there. Yeah.
That is exactly what they are going to do, and that's actually what they are doing.
Yeah, that's what the public is asking now. So let's have that. Yeah.
So this one, we can service it. It's a national identity. And we can service it if it has not accrued those debts, and those debts were not brought forward to be put on our shoulder, and I think it's just good enough. So because if you follow the history of the other one, it was good. But in terms of debts, to manage that debt, it was just a problem. Nobody could manage it. I don't know how many billions of dollars that you could have even paid off, maybe to the shareholders and all these others. It was just very hectic. So this time around, we are starting from there fresh. We can manage it. Why not?
All right.
That's where I am. So please bring in the person who's talking about who can give us more insight on the divorce law, the new law. The wonder of this act number 10 of 2024.
That one has
actually replaced a lot of problematic that we experienced in the past. and it was bringing a lot of discomfort within the society.
All right.
Good.
Thanks for coming through.
Welcome, sir.
Yeah. All right. I was just looking at some of the things that we, as we scrutinize this process, that we, you know, as the public, and this is very important, many things when you just, when you're just taking assumption, I had actually a lecturer, you know, it's an American, and he always said, well, assumption, you know, assumption is the mother of all, you know, I wouldn't say it's the F word. So I said, well, assumption is the mother of all whatever, you know, and you just, you know, you just miss the point. Yeah. So, yeah, don't just assume, don't just assume. And as citizens, we want to be informed, you know, don't take for granted. Okay. It must be, okay, it must be this. See yourself. Okay, give me. Let me see this. Let me see. And be able to say, yeah, that's what it is. Okay? That's what we talk about. So the other things that we don't, how will this actually airline be structured? That's what we're looking. How is this going to be structured? Will it be a wholly government-owned? Will it there be? If it's wholly government-owned, and we're looking at already, like somebody mentioned, Transnamib, which you keep actually just putting in money and money and money. And, you know, will it there be private sector participation, for example? Because if it is, if it's 100, if it's 100% state-owned, we are right back where we started. Eh? The history of state-owned airlines in Africa, you know, is littered with failures. Littered with failures, driven by political interference. That's one thing. Bloated payrolls, unsustainable routes, kept alive because of political reasons rather than actually commercial ones. So in Africa, we have seen this. So, and thirdly, what is the projected cost to the taxpayer? Not just to start the airline, you know, it's not just about to start it, but to sustain it. That's the issue. To sustain it. Because the real cost of Air Namibia was never just the startup. It was never just the startup. It was the years of bailout, the continuous cash injections, the debt that kept piling up while the airline really bleed blood, you know, bled money. So will this new airline come with a kept government guarantee, or is it an open check? Now, the other thing is also, how is this different now from Air Namibia? That's the question. How is this different? And we're not talking in terms of branding. We're not talking in terms of branding. Well, of course, the name is totally different. But in substance, what structural governance and operational changes, that's what we need to see, make this venture less likely to end in the same liquidation. So we should not just take it for granted. Oh, no, this is going to be different. Okay, show us. In terms of structure, in terms of governance, in terms of operational changes. Give us the paper, the transparency, is that what we're talking about? And as citizens, we should never allow ourselves to be in that position that, oh, because he said so, that's how it's going to be. Okay. Well, for those who trust that, so we have been banned before. If you were banned before, you will be very careful getting into the fire again. So that's why transparency, that's what we need. Where's the business case? Show us the business case. So if the answer is just better management,
Oh, because this time there will be better management. And then we have learned nothing. If that's just the case that, this time it's a better management, we have definitely learned nothing. System failed because the incentives are wrong. You know, not just because the people are bad. So what about the regional aviation landscape? That's also something that we need to look at. So we now have Fly Namibia operating domestically and regionally. So we have airline like Ethiopian Airlines, South African Airways, Kenya Airways, you know, dominating the continental route, you know, dominating the continental route. Where does Namibia Air fit? Where does Namibia Air fit? Is there a gap in the market? Or are we trying to fill a gap in our national ego? All right. So just to round off what we have talked about in this segment, the feasibility study of Namibia Air is done. It's being reviewed by government, and we do not know what it says. Up to now, we don't know what it says. Now, the 20 million was allocated for this study. Only about 4% of it, roughly 800,000, has reported been used. So the fate of the remaining million is unclear. So the committee behind this inter-ministerial, not independent, is not independent. So the matter, you know, and that matters really for accountability. That matters for accountability. And the government is keeping the finding under rep, you know, citing the complexity of the aviation industry. Complexity is real. Yes, that's true. But it is not an excuse for secrecy. All right. So the ghosts of Air Namibia are still fresh. And any plan to revive national airline must answer convincingly how this time will be different. So not in words, in structure, in governance, in accountability. So this is not about being against a national airline. Okay, this is about being for transparency. This is about making sure that if we do this, we do it right, because Namibia cannot afford another airline, cannot afford another Air Namibia. So not financially, not reputational, and not morally. We cannot afford. So, and that's where we end. And that's where we have Tate Ndaluvanda here.